PIT Files, the ultimate Steelers podcast.
Welcome aboard. I'm your host, Sean Drotar, and with week four in the books, it's time to take a spin around the NFL and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his special insights regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. And today in this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the Monday morning quarterback himself, Peter King, will join us. But as always, we start with the big interview. So let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us now is the sports director at 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. You can follow him at Jay Hathorn. It is Jeff Hathorn. How are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm good. It's a beautiful day, and you know, ever since Sunday, the rain has stopped, and of course, the moods are very good in Steel City right now.
Indeed. All seems to be right with the Steelers world. Le'Veon Bell is back, and they looked absolutely explosive. This game against the Chiefs was over after the first quarter. Ben Roethlisberger with the same number of touchdowns as incompletions in this game. You know things were going well for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Roethlisberger really had it going, and you know, they were able to get the deep threat early with a first play to Sammy Coates. I think it really opened up the game. And when you have a guy like Le'Veon Bell and you can bring in D'Angelo Williams and split out Le'Veon, I think it obviously presents some issues for the defense. And when Roethlisberger has had the time he had, is able to pick apart, and you saw what happened. He is still an elite quarterback. And, you know, he spreads the ball around, which I think is in a way unique to him, is how he will find the open receiver. Despite times where Antonio Brown or others might say, hey, I'm open, give me the ball, it really doesn't matter to him. He finds the open guy, and his vision is just uncanny.
Yeah, the offense looked like it was completely back together, and everything looked right. They looked comfortable. They looked strong. They looked dominant. Going forward, you know, we'd like to think, obviously, this is the Pittsburgh Steelers that everyone expected, not the one, of course, that inexplicably just got blasted by the Eagles. Looking at that game now as one of the four, is that a game where you look at it and just say, that was the wake-up call, that was the one sort of thing that happens in a season, and you just crumple it up and throw it away and move on? Or was there anything worrisome going forward that you think that the Steelers still have to maybe tone up from that loss?
Yeah, I still think there are some things to worry about. I think lack of pressure is still a concern for the Steelers' defense. You know, they were able to get to Alex Smith a few times, but because the Steelers scored 22 in the first quarter, that really made them a more one-dimensional team than they wanted to be, which allowed for some of those opportunities. So I think lack of pressure is still a concern for the Steelers. And really, their biggest concern right now are injuries. They may be down to their third-string right tackle for Sunday's game. Ryan Shazier is questionable. Jarvis Jones, questionable. They've got injuries at receiver. Ladarius Green, the tight end they signed from San Diego, hasn't even been able to practice yet with the team. So as injuries mount and it pushes the depth, when they face better teams, again, I think they caught the Chiefs in that perfect storm. But as they face better teams, they have a risk of being exposed with some of the youth they have in the secondary. And they're starting to rely on Justin Gilbert, who washed out in Cleveland, to play a role in that secondary. And they're dangerously close to being right at the edge of being way below average in that secondary. And I also want to give credit to Philadelphia. You mentioned the Philadelphia game. I thought Philly had a great game plan. They executed it. And they kind of did to the Steelers what the Steelers did to the Chiefs. They caught them early and then just didn't let their foot off the gas.
Le'Veon Bell looked terrific in his return, 18 carries, 144 yards. For those doing the quick math, that's 8 yards a carry and another 34 yards on 5 catches. Question going forward, is this the kind of rate you expect to see for Bell, or do you expect to see D'Angelo Williams maybe still have a role because he was pretty effective for them and has been effective for them when Bell's been out? Is this more of a there's an opportunity to really run Bell and keep D'Angelo Williams fresh? Do you think that will balance out later, or is this just now the Bell show?
I think it's going to be mostly the Bell show, but what you'll see, especially with Eli Rogers, their slot receiver, out again this week, is you'll see them run the two backs where they split out Le'Veon Bell as a receiver. They may run some reverses. I mean, there's all kinds of packages, and they've got a creative offensive coordinator in Todd Haley. So you'll see them do some more exotic things that you wouldn't expect, say, from a typical Steeler offense. But it will be Le'Veon's show. We saw last year where D'Angelo didn't get pushed to the side, but his carries were limited. And the Steelers have seen, and as most NFL teams know, injuries will come up. And being able to keep D'Angelo Williams fresh by giving him just a few carries, by keeping him in but having him there just in case, could be beneficial, because in that playoff game last year against Denver, I mean, they were down to Fitz Toussaint as their tailback. So I don't think they mind giving D'Angelo the rest just in case, you know, something happens to Le'Veon another time, as he's dealt with injuries every year of his career.
Talk a little bit about Sammy Coates. I mean, everyone knows about Antonio Brown. Of course, there's so many great receiving options. You have Darius Heyward-Bey, Marcus Wheaton. Each only had one catch, but they both went for touchdowns. But Coates is emerging as one of the absolute best deep threats in the league. This is four straight games in which he's had a catch longer than 40 yards. He really seems to be opening things up for the other guys underneath.
It's amazing, because you came into the year and you would think one of the weaknesses of Steelers, one of the issues they were going to have, is the loss of Martavis Bryant, who is an exceptional deep threat, and he's gone for the year, suspended for the season. And Coates has just seized that opportunity. And when he came out of Auburn, the knock against him was, yeah, he could make the plays that you've seen, but then he'll drop the easy one. And he'll do that like every other attempt or every other target, he's going to drop it. But he's been better. His attention to detail, especially in practice. And to give you an idea, Antonio Brown is, you know, you see the dancing, and there's a lot of things with Antonio. That guy is the last guy on the field every day. He's got the jugs machine, and he is catching passes until everybody has left the field. And Sammy has watched this. Not as much that Antonio has taken him under his wing, but Coates has watched what it takes to be an elite receiver. And he's starting to be better with his consistency. And if that continues to improve, they could have a steal where they drafted him.
Yeah, there was actually a sort of a request for some clarity on what unsportsmanlike conduct really is after Antonio Brown gets his for dancing. Sometimes the no fun league does sort of rear its head from time to time, doesn't it?
It does. And it's kind of borderline. I mean, he knows the rules. And, you know, he'll always tell us, you know, it's not easy to score a touchdown, and he wants to celebrate. Of course, there are a lot of other guys that have scored touchdowns in the league and have found other ways to celebrate. So Mike Tomlin was saying that they need to find out what he can and can't do, because they don't want to take the fun out of the game for him. But he's also got to know that one of these 15-yard penalties could cost them in a game. It hasn't yet, but if he does that in a close game and they've got to kick off from the 15, that could be a bigger issue for them.
Going forward now, they have the Jets coming up next. The Jets, an interesting team, and not everything's been working out for them, but we've seen that they've had their moments, especially on defense as well. So I think I'm intrigued with this matchup. You'd think the Steelers would have it, but I think looming in the back of their heads a little bit, that Eagles loss, and that's, I'm sure it's in the back of the fans' minds. Do you think it's in the back of the players' minds at all that you know, they can have these moments as well? They're not exactly perfect just yet.
And that is a good front for the New York Jets. I mean, yeah, they've had issues mostly with Ryan Fitzpatrick and their offense, although they've had some issues in their secondary, too, of receivers getting free. But that front is very impressive. And Steve McClendon, who played with the Steelers up until last year, signed as a free agent. The Steelers know him. They know what he brings. And McClendon knows the Steelers' offense. And add on to that, that your left guard could be an undrafted second-year player, and your right tackle could be an undrafted fifth-year player. That could spell issues for the Steelers and what they want to do, because if Ben's running around like he does against Philly, you could see what potentially could happen. Now, I still think the Steelers are a better team, and I like their defensive matchup against the Jets' offense, at least the way they played to this point. But there could be issues for them if that offensive line doesn't get healthy, and they do have some questions there.
Well, that is the Steelers, and they are one of the teams that I've always thought, really all offseason, feeling it again, despite that blip in Philadelphia, that this is a team that can go to the Super Bowl, and this is a team that can win it, and boy, did they look that like that on Sunday. Make sure you follow Jeff out at Twitter. You can follow him at Jay Hathorn, and of course, if you're in Pittsburgh, beautiful Pittsburgh, one of my favorite towns, actually. Love Pittsburgh. He is the sports director at 93.7 The Fan. Next up is the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now it's time for the coach, Brian Billick, who's brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time with SeatGeek. Coach, when you use SeatGeek, what makes that so great?
Well, it's got too many things to cover in just one show. I mean, the great thing is the how broad-based in terms of the different ticket agencies that it brings together for you. You're going to get the best choice. You're going to see exactly where the seats are. You're going to get a rating on how good a deal this is. And most importantly, every transaction is guaranteed by SeatGeek.
Well, I know I use it, and if you use it as well, you can now today use the promo code Billick, and then you'll get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. So do what I do. Do what the coach does. Use SeatGeek. Make sure you get your family the best seats for concerts, sports, and everything else that you can go enjoy. Coach, this is another fascinating week in the NFL, as it always is. But I'll start with the most recent game, the Monday night game last night. We watched the Minnesota Vikings leap to still continue their run. They're now 4-0. There have been essentially a surprise for everybody, in as much as the pieces seem to keep falling off the car here and there, but the car keeps going at full speed. You know, what kind of job are they getting done up there in Minnesota? It's extremely impressive.
Yeah, it's spectacular, and it's because you can base it on defense. This is, for my money, maybe the best defense in the National Football League. They're built right, a dominant front seven, a secondary that doesn't give up big plays. That was the thing last night that jumped out at you, and you knew it was going to be a problem for the New York Giants. They had one big play, the big 67-yarder that they were able to hit, and that was it. You have to try to generate some big plays particularly when you're going to go on the road. And then Minnesota, although not overwhelmingly on offense, but were able to, you know, kind of keep the drives alive. They were 8 of 16 on third down, so they kind of kept the drives alive. They did not turn the ball over. Sam Bradford was excellent that way. And they got just enough out of the running game, which they stuck with 30-plus carries for over 100 yards, that the Giants just couldn't combat that on the road. That's going to be the formula that Minnesota will win with all year long.
Looking over at the NFC East now that the Giants lost that game, they are at 2-2. They started out well, and I think people thought that maybe this was going to all fit for them going over the season. Now they've lost to everybody else in the divisions on a winning streak. Philly, of course, still leads now with the bye week. They're still unbeaten at 3-0. But there isn't a team with a losing record. Now, we're only four games in. But have we underestimated the NFC East, or has this been something of a beneficiary of the schedule?
Yeah, to a degree. We'll see when they start really taking each other on. We're going to find out about the Philadelphia Eagles, who right now look pretty darn good. I mean, when you look at what happened over the weekend, how impressive is Pittsburgh and what they did to Kansas City? Well, what does that tell us about Philadelphia, who beat them last week and held them to 3 points? How good are, by way of example as well, the Oakland Raiders, who we were kind of dismissive of the fact because they lost at home to Atlanta. They go on the road and beat an undefeated Baltimore team. How good does that tell us Atlanta is? So, you know, you can draw some comparisons. Philadelphia is for real. We're going to find out going forward just how much for real. And the Dallas Cowboys, again, the schedule has not been that taxing for them. But by the same token, you know, they've looked pretty darn good with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back that they lead the league in third down conversions and they've got the top runner in the National Football League. So, yeah, particularly with New York and Dallas, these teams are for real. Washington still seems to be trying to get its footing. Don't know about them, and we'll see. You know, obviously they have a chance to continue to get better as we move along here. But the division looks very, very good. But I don't know that there's any dominating teams in it. Outside, we'll see how good Philly is. But I don't know that there is any dominating team or division in the NFC right now.
Let's take a look over at those Steelers in the AFC. Now they got Le'Veon Bell back, and you could see what a difference that makes. Pittsburgh's offense essentially just rolled, and this is something that they could do. You saw Le'Veon Bell line up even as a wide receiver for more than a few snaps to make sure that they mixed things up and were able to still use D'Angelo Williams, give the Chiefs a lot of different looks. When you look at the AFC now with Pittsburgh kind of being all together again, Pittsburgh, New England, Houston, all leading their divisions at 3-1. Denver at 4-0. Which of these are contenders, and which of these maybe still have a little bit of work to do to get that way?
Well, I think they're all contenders. Denver playing great defense and running the ball, and notwithstanding the quarterback position, but they both, Paxton Lynch looked very calm when he went in. Trevor Siemian obviously has played very solid. The Pittsburgh Steelers still remain to me you know, this could be a truly dominant team. But here they're a week removed from losing 34-3 to the Philadelphia Eagles. So we still have some sorting out to do. We're only at the quarter mark. We'll know more at the halfway mark, obviously. And for the Steelers coming up, this week they're going to play the Jets. How real are the Jets? Another team that a couple of weeks ago, me included, were saying, wow, this team is a Super Bowl caliber team. Now they can't even get out of their way, having nine interceptions in the last two games. But we're going to find out about the Steelers because they're going to play the Jets. They have to go to Miami, and it's always tough going down into Miami to play. And then they're going to play the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. So we're going to know by the midway point just how real and consistent the Pittsburgh Steelers are. Was that 34-3 beatdown by the Philadelphia Eagles the proverbial wake-up call, or was it an indicator that maybe there are still some chinks in the armor?
Well, one of the teams that you mentioned also earlier that surprised, I think, a lot of folks, the Atlanta Falcons are 3-1. There is an impression that maybe they're doing it with smoke and mirrors to an extent. They lost that opening game to Tampa Bay when Jameis Winston just looked electric, and he hasn't looked the same since. But they're averaging almost 40 points a game. That's probably not sustainable. But given the shootouts they've been in, you wonder if that's almost what they're going to have to do to keep winning. So if you're the Atlanta Falcons, what do you do to keep everything rolling, knowing that you probably can't, barring something very strange, keep putting up 40 a game?
Yeah, well, the most impressive thing to me is the fact that the wins they've gotten on the road at Oakland and New Orleans. I know New Orleans isn't a great team, but still a tough place to play. And then a very physical Carolina Panthers team, and to win where they did with Matt Ryan having a record year. He's on pace to just blow away. 2012 was his best year. We had, 4,700 yards, and I think it was 36 touchdowns, something like that. He's on pace to just blow that away. You're right, it's unrealistic to think they're going to stay at this pace. But with Devontae Freeman in the backfield, with Mohamed Sanu opposite the receiver, they're, and the offensive line playing very well, this is a very legitimate offensive group. Now, defensively, they may have to score 40 points a game because defensively, I think they still may struggle a little bit. Remember, now they did give up 33 points to Carolina and 32 points to New Orleans. And that's Drew Brees and Cam Newton. I get that. But they also gave up 28 points to the Oakland Raiders and 31 points to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're still struggling defense. The key is, can they increase their pass rush ability a little bit, get a little bit better that way? But I think this is a team that certainly can be a factor.
The Patriots have Tom Brady back in action this week. They play the Browns, who are winless. This doesn't look like a real good matchup for the Browns, but it looks like a great place for Tom Brady to kickstart his 2016 campaign. Do you expect any sort of growing pains or any sort of wobbliness coming back, or is Brady and Belichick, is this a well-oiled enough machine that it's going to look like he never left?
Oh, no, yeah, more of the latter, although there may be some hiccups on the way. I look at this like a Broadway play. You know, what do? You take it out of town to get it up to snuff, and you bring it back to town into New York. Well, this is their off-Broadway, out-of-town debut, good place to go, play a Cleveland team. I don't know. I mean, the football gods just, I don't know what they have against the Cleveland Browns. You know, the tight losses they've had, and now they've got to take on the New England Patriots. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady coming back. Tough combination. Obviously, a good team for New England to open with on the road, kind of, get the, dust off the rust, so to speak. And I imagine it'll be a game plan that's heavy. Cleveland's near last in the league, or one of the worst teams in the league against the run, so I imagine we're going to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount, let Tom Brady get his feet underneath him. And so then when they come back, we'll see exactly after, because, they got some interesting games after this, and they're obviously poised for it. Most, not the least of which, they're going to play the Cincinnati Bengals. They got to play the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh. And then they get to go back at those Buffalo Bills who they just lost to. So they're going to be challenged coming up, but I'm sure they're excited about it.
Well, we've been talking about the good thing teams have been doing, and there's a lot of those stories around the league, but one of the ones that stands out is a team that's not getting it done, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, now 1-3. Carson Palmer in the concussion protocol. They have a Thursday night football game coming up. On the surface, it doesn't look like there's that much wrong with the Cardinals, but something is obviously off kilter, Coach. What are you seeing?
Well, they're a little like the Carolina Panthers. I was talking all day yesterday on my shows for the NFL Network. People say, okay, what's wrong with the Carolina Panthers? And when you look at them, they're not far off. I mean, they're not running the ball quite as well as last year. They're not quite as good on third down. They're not quite as explosive. Defensively, they're not quite as dynamic. They're good, but not quite what we saw last year. And you add all those up, and all of a sudden now, that means some losses. The Arizona Cardinals appear the same way. They just don't seem to be as good as they were last year. Still solid, but not good enough, obviously, to get a win. And now they've played a couple good teams here. The New England Patriots, obviously, Buffalo in a little bit of a role. The Rams, it's always a tough defensive struggle with the Rams. But, yeah, I'm not quite sure what's going to have to happen. The offensive line's going to have to step up. They're going to have to start getting down the field a little bit more with that gifted receiving core they have. And that front seven in particular, the defense needs to start showing up and doing the things that it did last year in terms of putting pressure on the quarterback and stuffing the running game.
He is the coach, Brian Billick, and you can use that same last name, Billick, on the SeatGeek app right now and get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. Coach, thank you so much for the insight. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Coming up next, we'll go into overtime with Peter King.
Overtime.
This week, we're delighted to be joined by Peter King, editor-in-chief of MMQB.com. That's Monday Morning Quarterback, the site that's become synonymous with the best and deepest NFL coverage anywhere. Peter's brought to us by SeatGeek, because it's football season. The NFL and college football are in full swing. Baseball's playoffs are upon us, so be sure to visit SeatGeek.com and download the SeatGeek app for all the best ticket deals. Remember, the NHL and NBA seasons are on the horizon, too, so make sure you and your family are getting the best deals for the most exciting sporting events every time with SeatGeek. How are you doing today, Peter?
Everything's going great. Thank you for hosting me today. This is going to be fun.
Our pleasure. Well, I'll go with a couple quick ones for you. We'll start right here. Odell Beckham Jr. suggested that he's being targeted by officials after his three-catch, 23-yard performance on Monday Night Football. Do the Zebras really let defenders have their way with him more than any other receiver?
No, but that was a marginal call against the Minnesota Vikings that Xavier Rhodes could have been flagged for hitting Beckham out of bounds. But my feeling is that once you start to get this paranoia that the league is against you, that the officials are against you, I think Odell Beckham needs to understand that every official in this league is judged on every call he makes. And if he goes over the line on Odell Beckham Jr. to either call something against him or to do something out of the ordinary against one player, A, he's not going to get any playoff assignments. B, he's not going to be in the league for very long. So I think most of that is a figment of Odell Beckham's imagination.
Well, let's stick with wide receivers. Josh Gordon will stay on the reserve suspended list after saying he would enter rehab. And that seems like the right thing for him. I don't think there's any question about that. And while there's no need for the Browns to move on immediately, is this relationship irrevocably damaged?
I think the Browns, especially the current iteration of the front office and coaching staff, I had invested so much time and energy, and basically it's about the fourth major stumble that he's had, Josh Gordon has had. And my feeling is that at this point, especially when you're trying to build a program, you are getting ready to have him come onto your team after being let back in football by the NFL after his year-long suspension. And you have to ask yourself, why are we in this business? Are we in this business to try to get somebody off the substances that have bedeviled him for most of his adult life? Or are we in here to win football games? Well, I think most teams would say, maybe one, two, or three strikes, okay, we can take it from a great player, but no matter how great he is, at some point, we got to pull the plug. In my opinion, the Browns have reached that point. I don't know if they are going to, get rid of him after he finishes this rehab, but in my opinion, they should.
coming off their shocking shutout win over the Patriots, the Bills coach Rex Ryan said that he was, quote, BSing about having sources that tipped him off about Jacoby Brissett starting at quarterback. Now, with Rex, you know there's a lot of gamesmanship. Is this just fun, or does this maybe start to undermine the trust between the Bills, Ryan, and the media that covers him?
I mean, anybody who I heard, I read his transcript from the press conference where he claimed to know what was going on with the Patriots. There's no way he was going to know what goes on with the Patriots. There's no way he's going to know who's going to start for the Patriots. He says that almost in a comedic way, and it's just part of his shtick. I mean, maybe it's because I've known Ryan for a long time, and I've listened to him for a long time, but he's one of those coaches that about 85% of what he says, I think, just goes in one ear and out the other, because a lot of it is so silly. I just don't think it matters. And I don't think that we ought to be taking seriously when he gets on the conference call and asks Julian Edelman, hey, Julian, Walt Satulski from the Buffalo News, are you playing quarterback this week? I mean, it's a shtick. It's fun. So I don't think it's to be taken very seriously.
Well, keeping in the taking maybe a little gamesmanship being taken seriously, Josh Norman really went after the Carolina Panthers after their loss this season, needling them, saying, quote, you get what you pay for. Now, obviously, they parted ways with him in the offseason in one of sort of the most bizarre and notable stories in the offseason. How badly did the Panthers realistically now regret that decision?
Well, I know Dave Gettleman quite well. He's general manager of the Panthers. And I can tell you pretty categorically that Dave Gettleman does not regret the decision. And in fact, you know, let's think about, I just looked this up yesterday. You know, let's think about the Carolina Panthers right now and what they've done so far this year. Their defense in the first three games of the year allowed 307, 302, and 211 net yards. And so that is not, it's not the defense's fault what's going on. Now, they got shredded by the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. So everybody is going to say, clearly, their defense, the rush isn't there. They don't cover as well, blah, blah, blah. And in my opinion, I talked to Julio Jones after this game. I really think that a part of the problem was in the game plan, was in how they defended Julio Jones. Because in a lot of ways, they singled Julio Jones. His 77 or 75 yard touchdown, whatever it was, Ben Wickery didn't have any help until he was too far gone. So I just look at this and I say we can't really be prisoners of the moment. They had a really bad defensive game, but they just simply don't believe in paying a cornerback $15 million or $14 million, whatever it was. And so far, since Gettleman has gotten there, he's been proven right in his personnel acumen. We'll see how this pans out, but no, I don't think they're second-guessing themselves over it.
Last one, Peter. The first-round pick, Paxton Lynch, played well at quarterback in relief of the injured Trevor Siemian in Denver's easy win over Tampa. Broncos coach Gary Kubiak stated unequivocally that Siemian would remain the starter. Now, is that the right choice, or is it just the safe one?
It's the right choice. I think Gary Kubiak loved the intelligence and the decision-making of Trevor Siemian, and he's got better arm than people give him credit for. So I think that Trevor Siemian not only has done nothing to lose this job, but he's really, in the last, whatever, six quarters that he played, he was a huge factor in helping his team win. So I think this absolutely is the right decision. You don't make a replacement at a position on the field unless you are trying to make your team better. Benching a healthy enough Trevor Siemian would be making this team worse.
Brought to you by SeatGeek. He's the one and only Peter King. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @SI_PeterKing and visit MMQB.com for the most insightful NFL coverage on a daily basis. Thanks for your time, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's the final gun, and it's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files. Check out all the podcasts for every team in the league because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.